This week, the NASDAQ blasted higher over 100 points, while gold and related shares held long-term support. Welcome, everybody. Your host, Chris Walczak. It's just great to be back with you this weekend. We have another Muy Grande-sized episode for you, starting off with Jeffrey Nichols, senior economist of Roslyn Capital. He returns with his latest insights on the financial markets. And like the rest of us here at Goldseek, he's convinced the precious metals may be entering a new bull market. He's got his eyes firmly set on 1,400. And once that hurdle is passed, look out above to $2,000 an ounce and beyond. Positive seasonal factors and demand from China, India, and around the world could be just what it takes to kickstart the next leg higher. And gold and silver are cheap relative to U.S. equities. But the number one impetus that could send the metals flying might just come from a little known source. He thinks, along with Nick Barashev, that large financial institutions such as pension funds hold much less than 1%, just a fraction of their clients' funds in the metals. Once hedge funds and financial institutions figure that out and their clients start to demand for inflation insurance, the sky is the limit. Next up, Kevin Kerr of Kerr Trading International rejoins the broadcast. We discuss the current $107 billion current U.S. budget deficit, and then on to the precious metals. Kevin Kerr thinks silver is poised for exceptional gains. And he says, watch out for another Brexit-like event. That might be all that's necessary for higher prices. Then Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest must-hear report. Goldseek.com radio begins now with the market weather recap. Partly cloudy skies appeared over the precious metals sector on U.S. dollar strength. Ahead of next week's FOMC rate-setting meeting by the Fed, investors chose the sidelines. Nevertheless, the Fed Funds futures contract currently indicates virtually no chance of a rate hike this month or next month. By Friday's closing bell, the yellow metal gave back only $24, finishing at a solid $13.10 an ounce. Silver shed just 50 cents, closing just under $19. The precious metals XAU shares finished off too at $91.50, but still remains above solid support, like gold. And then West Texas Intermediate crude gave back $2.85 a barrel, just above $43. But black gold is still shadowing that CRB index, which both are in very solid bullish technical positions, and a long-term cup and handle, which may sound like jargon, but it is William O'Neill's favorite pattern. The top story moving the market this week stemmed from the greenback, which climbed sharply ahead of next week's FOMC meeting, plus the BOJ meeting. There's some speculation that there could be a wild card stemming from the BOJ meeting, both of which occur on September 20th to 21st. The Fed Funds futures indicate there will be no rate hikes till maybe December and probably next year. Fed officials' favorite inflation indicator remains the core inflation rate, which remains well below its 2% target. And even if officials raise rates two more times, the real rate of interest would remain strongly negative, all positive for the precious metals. Meanwhile, investors remain vigilant, preparing for the potential of another Brexit-like situation. Gold blasted higher $50 an ounce immediately following that announcement. Should another EU nation leave the Eurozone, a trend might emerge, and there could be a rush to the exits, further improving gold's investment prospects. Frankly, investors and markets do not care for uncertainty, only volatility investors. Meanwhile, former associate of George Soros warned that the price of gold is going to skyrocket to $2,000 an ounce. Victor Sperando manages over $3 billion. He's been in the business for about 50 years and remains a Wall Street insider. Again, it's amazing to see how non-professed gold bugs keep entering the crowd. Precious metals, bottom line. Although the U.S. dollar rallied, it still remains well under resistance with only a few weeks left before it could retest the lows. Gold and the XAU remain above key support, so although the sell-off is unnerving and could continue for a while, the new bull remains healthy for the time being. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, mostly sunny skies appeared over the New York Stock Exchange on news of relatively solid economic numbers. The Dow Jones Industrials picked up 38 points for the week, a fractional gain, closing at 18,123. The S&P 500 picked up 11, about 0.5%, ending at 21,39 for the week, while the NASDAQ picked up 118, about 2.3%, finishing at 52,44. A top story putting some downward pressure, though, on stocks on Friday emerged from the financial sector, which was somewhat rocked, I think, by news of a $14 billion fine against Deutsche Bank over the mortgage-backed securities scandal. The financial sector has been under pressure somewhat, and this has led some economists to speculate as a sign of weakened internal market strength and lower odds of a rate hike, as banks tend to benefit from the rate differential. Bottom line on Wall Street, the VIX volatility index crashed, which could be an indicator of a market bottom in the coming weeks. So for the time being, I remain neutral on U.S. equities. Coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio with Robert Ian and our two big guests. We'd like for you to stay with us right here. Kevin Kerr, president of Kerr Trading International Proprietary Trading. Welcome back.
Good to be here. Thanks.
Great to have you back. And, you know, September 30th, this month, the U.S. government evidently runs out of cash. Again, it's making the blogosphere. Will they or won't they shut down the government for an extended time, maybe during the upcoming elections as well?
I think it's a great idea. I mean, listen, I don't feel like pulling out my checkbook and writing them a check right now, although I seem to do that a lot, like we all do. Seems taxes go up, and every time we turn around, they're running out of money. And to be honest with you, I don't really know what we always get for that. But that's kind of a whole other topic for another show. I think that, you know, we see this happen, you know, probably at least every 6 months, where they cry cash poverty, threaten to shut down the government, begin shutting the national parks and certain services, and it becomes inconvenient for consumers in America. And somehow the money is allocated and everything starts to begin. So I think this is not going to really cause any too much kerfuffle. But, you know, we really take a long, serious look at the entire economic structure of this country and how we've gotten ourselves into the quagmire of printing more and more money and going deeper into debt. You know, really get a handle. And I wish we had a better choice of candidates. I know it is an election year. And I don't just mean for the presidential candidates, but I mean all our elected officials. Serious players in there to figure out the problems. You know, every 6 months growing deficit that we have, it should be a wake-up call in general for everyone to start what we can really do about it. And we may not be the best country on the earth right now, and we're certainly deeply in debt.
Ditto in triplicate. The debt issue is just one that doesn't get people elected.
That's for sure.
And we saw what happened to Dr. Ron Paul. I mean, he recognized this decades in advance just against this reckless spending, but it just doesn't put people in office.
And that's the thing. You know, it isn't going to get you elected, and then they will pigeonhole you into sounding like fear monger. If you're talking about the reality, you know, and that's what's so ironic about this entire thing is the people that are speaking the most intelligently, a real grasp on what's going on, are vilified.
Then let's go back in time. In 2008, you know, the Dow Jones peaked at 14,000, cut in half nearly. What folks are referring to now is the Great Recession. Here we are facing 18,000 on the Dow.
And look at the NASDAQ go, Chris. I mean, it's, you know, all these markets are just frothy, and it makes me extremely, well, it doesn't make me nervous because I'm well positioned into this, and so are my readers. But the bottom line is everybody should be taking a long look at their portfolio, in my opinion, and looking to unload some, take on some profits and unload some stuff heading into the fourth quarter here. You know, the Fed clearly has its hands tied here. So we kind of take them off the table. I don't see them doing anything the rest of this year now at this point with the numbers we got out last time. If they do, if they feel that a quarter point raise or anything is going to happen in December, I think it would just because they feel forced in that position and then not too much will happen. But at the end of the day, it's not going to make much difference. But I would really be looking to lighten my load in the equities at these levels. I mean, it's just getting it's just getting extremely lofty, in my opinion, and a lot of jittery nerves, especially with the election, a lot of the uncertainty we have in Europe. I think it's time to take some money off the table or move it into something else and be more diversified. That's my opinion at this point.
Well, we promote a diversification and portfolio approach here. I like your thoughts, and I obviously you can take some profits, but you can also hedge your positions if you feel that, like so many of our guests here, that valuations have gotten out of hand. Things are a bit frothy. Let's move on here. Another question for you, and that's, of course, the yellow metal. And during that five-year bear market, we always had rallies at the beginning of the year, it seemed like, and they fizzled out. Does this rally have teeth?
I do feel that we are looking at a little bit different matrix this year. And, of course, as we head into fourth quarter, we always see a little bit of pop in the metals anyway, just from retail demand. But also, in general, we see more buying in the fourth quarter. We have. I would say that gold has kind of underperformed what I had hoped it would this year, and I'm looking forward to kind of make up some ground here at the end of the year. So I remain fairly bullish on gold. I don't know that we're going to get a huge breakout, but then again, we may, say around November when the election goes down. But I think, we can kind of take the Fed out of the picture for the rest of the year. I think they've played all their cards more or less. I don't know how much upside gold has the rest of the year. I like silver a little better than gold still for the rest of the year. But overall, I think the metals will remain strong and grab some more fortitude as we head into the end of the year. And we'll have to see what 2017 brings.
So in your estimation, you feel that the five-year bear market, even if we don't head back to new highs, the worst might be in the rearview mirror?
I do. I think a lot of the weaker hands we've seen shaken out, and we've seen a lot of consolidation. I think that, you know, the price levels that we got to, I think were a good solid base, and we're kind of, you know, we're backstepping a little bit from that. It's kind of like a little bit of a back and forth motion right now. No real strong surge and no real tumble. It's going to kind of hinge on economic data and on what the Fed does for a while. But I think you're going to see a lot more buying come out of Asia going forward here. And I know we talk about that a lot, but I really do think we'll begin to see that now. And that could really change the game here. So we build a new baseline, probably around this level. And so we'll move to the next tier. Where exactly that tops out and how quickly, I'm not clear on yet. And a large part of that will depend on what we see in the next few months, not only with the elections, but also how everything transitions in Europe. With the Brexit and make sure nobody else is leaving or what's going down there. So a lot of those things are going to have an impact on the fiat currencies, and that, of course, is going to impact gold as well. So, yes, I think we are out of that quagmire that we've all experienced for the last several years, and I think there are some real upside opportunities in the metals now. Of course, there will be periods of time where we do see slight pullbacks, but I don't think anything back to the low levels we saw during this last 5 years.
The Brexit clearly was a key component. You don't see that every day. And they just had anticipated more of the status quo, but it wasn't to be, and the people spoke.
Well, and Angela Merkel's now experiencing a lot of pushback from her country with this recent referendum they had or this recent vote they had. And so, you know, we could see even more changes coming. It's really an unstable situation. I don't want to put too fine a point on it. I have my own interests in Eastern Europe. So a lot's changing in Europe right now and with the EU. And of course, you know, the UK always kind of had one foot out the door with never changing the sterling to the euro anyway. I mean, it was shocking that this whole thing went down, but I wasn't all that surprised because, in my opinion, they were never all in anyway. One thing probably people are wondering about, what is going on with the energy markets? And of course, I follow those very closely as well as we do all the markets. But the energies have really been interesting. And I would tell your listeners that my opinion is on the energy that we still have a lot of supply. We saw that with the most recent inventory reports. And this oil price is going to be staying probably around this area for quite some time until OPEC and Russia and the rest of them can get together and really make meaningful long-term cuts in production, which I don't really see happening soon. So I am not very bullish on the energies right at the moment, and I think they're worth keeping an eye on, but there may be some downside opportunities as well. But for the most part, it's kind of like a sideline play for the energies right now. There's a lot a lot of volatility and not a lot of upside or downside.
This would seem to imply that you're looking for a slowdown worldwide, maybe in the BRIC nations as well as the U.S. and the EU for a recession?
I think even if we stay at the level we're at of consumption, you know, unless we see a major dramatic increase in consumption, to whittle down that overflow supply that we had when OPEC was pumping full out, we still have so much a glut of oil floating around the world that we'd have to see an increase in demand exponentially and a cut in production. Otherwise, they're never going to get caught up, and the prices probably will stick around this area for some time to come. Now, that might not be forever. I don't think it will be. But I'm not saying I'm bearish on global demand. I think it has to stay at least at this level with a cut in production, or the demand has to increase significantly to whittle through that supply before we see oil, you know, be able to sustain a $65, $70 price. For now, it's trapped in this range.
But I wouldn't be surprised to see a brief moonshot to those levels on a relief rally here. My thinking really stems mostly from the CRB commodities index, which just was so oversold, even if no one had any penchant for or interest in the commodities. It's highly correlated to the CRB.
Although I've been trading oil since 1989, and when I first started trading oil on the trading floor, a normal day's range was like 50 cents. I think the maximum range was a dollar. Okay, and now we see crude move. Sometimes, you know, we've seen it move as much as $10 either side of unchanged in a day. So, you know, things, it's a different world we live in today. So easily, we could definitely see if something happens, some kind of disruption or, you know, whatever might be the case. We could easily see crude spike to $60, $65. I agree. I don't think it'd be a sustained price. But we could see crude also the opposite. We could see crude drop down to 25, 30 again, but it wouldn't stay there. So I think we're trapped in that range between like 47 and 55 for now.
To what do you attribute that volatility?
Yeah, I mean, it's just the nature of the markets we're in. You know, when I was a young man in this business, we didn't have the high frequency trading we have today, and we didn't have a lot of the limits that it allowed in the electronic trading. Because of course, when I started in this business, there really was no electronic trading per se. It was all done on the floor, and so that's created a whole range of volume that was great. It's great. It's created a lot of volume that we never had before, but it's also created a lot of volatility, wider range that we never had before. So it's a different world. And of course, I trade in this market. I mean, you know, looking back on it, we were thinking about it because of 9/11. We were thinking about it the other day, and I'm thinking, wow, I remember when crude a big day was 50 cents, not, you know, $5. I started in New York in the World Trade Center in the U.S. Dollar Index, working next to people like Paul Tudor Jones, others. Yeah, so Paul was probably about 32 or so, and I was probably about 20. And so I worked next to the New York Cotton Exchange, and I got my first seat on the Cotton Exchange, and the dollar index was one of the markets the Cotton Exchange owned. So orange juice, cotton, and dollar index used to be right there in the World Trade Center. Of course, all that's gone now. A long time ago, a lot of great memories there. I think one of Paul's funds just went under, I think, or had a lot of redemption. So I don't know. He's doing just fine, though. I think he's got plenty of money. A lot of guys who left the floor, you know, a lot of them, I left in the mid-90s, and I went and traded over-the-counter derivatives, English firm. A lot of people back then, and when the floors closed up, you know, they went on to other things because a lot of them couldn't make the transition to trading on the screen. Of course, nowadays, we have almost nobody on the trading floors. There's still some people left in Chicago, but New York has closed their floors, and of course London has some, but it's very, very few people. So it's not even like it used to be at all. So when I was just starting out, there was probably the amount of people that are trading on the floor today were trading on the screen. It was like the opposite, you know, and everybody was on the trading floor. Now nobody's on the trading floor, and everybody trades on the screen.
Why don't you tell folks more about the services you provide or any contact information you'd like to leave today?
Well, sure. Anybody can come learn more about us at kerrcommoditieswatch.com. It's kerrcommoditieswatch.com. You can learn about one of our newsletters there. We trade commodity options with that letter. It's really easy to understand for people just starting out. You don't have to be intimidated. I do everything in plain English, and we try to get people involved in the commodity options. We're a buying service mainly, so it's limited risk. And then we also have a futures letter called Resource Roundtable, which is not just me, but also some top traders that participate in that, recommending futures trades in the markets. And we also look at key resource equities from time to time as well, but primarily we're a futures and options service. We have a contact information there. If you want to join, we certainly can offer you a discount. You can contact us through the website for that. if you're just starting out, we're happy to help. I don't know. We cover all the markets. You know, like, we didn't get to talk about it today, but the grain markets have been pretty interesting, and soft commodities, we do a lot in those, as well as the energy, and certainly the metals are a huge part of what we do.
Kevin Kerr, we're going to look forward to having you back on the show.
Thanks, Chris, so much.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves. Industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank. And founding director, their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their RIA project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Welcome back, Jeffrey Nichols.
It's nice to be here, Chris.
Start off today with just what's on your radar screen. Any topicality?
Right now, I think I'm looking at gold and feeling relatively encouraged that we're in a sustainable uptrend and that we've seen the lows of the cycle. And the next few years are going to be a very positive time for gold investors, with prices rising to new heights, perhaps even by the end of the year, and certainly in the next few years. It's been a difficult time for gold bulls, certainly.
No, I think it's well said, and it's time for a stampede here. So let's hope.
I think we could see one. But the important thing in terms of looking at the last few years, we always advocate that investors hold a minimal core holding in physical gold, bullion coins or small bars, as an insurance policy and as a hedge against the risks that are inherent in more conventional equity and fixed income investments. And so when you hold some gold for that reason, you really, in a sense, don't want to see it increase in price, because that would be an indicator that we've got more serious problems in the economy, and that's not something that we should be happy to see. Although at times you do want to hold more than the 5 to 10%, and I think we're entering a period like that right now.
It's a bit bifurcated, because on the one hand, it really doesn't matter whether you're in a period of inflation or deflation. It just happens to be an important component of every portfolio. I think it benefits from almost any situation, and I think that's what you're alluding to. But increasing exposure, the type of comments one would expect from someone who sees dangerous financial and economic conditions on the horizon.
We're certainly in treacherous territory. You know, the world economy is, in a sense, walking on a knife edge. Globally, economic activity is still decreasing in China, in India, in Africa, in Latin America. economies are all under pressure, and stock markets around the world are in retreat. And here in the United States, it's questionable, despite the Fed's, the Federal Reserve's actions to raise interest rates a month ago, it's possible we're back in a declining or weakening economic situation, and the Fed is going to find itself having to take heroic action to prevent the economy from sliding into renewed recession or worse.
You talk about the economic situation on a knife's edge.
I would say you should be holding some gold, and the amount that any investor decides to hold should be a function of their exposure to the risks inherent in other investment assets. So if you've got a sizable portion of your wealth tied up in equities or fixed income instruments, I think that the argument for holding gold becomes stronger and stronger. Investors around the world seem always to be a step or two ahead of the United States. And on a global basis, we see very strong demand for gold. And gold, importantly, is in the last year, or even the last few years, while the price has been coming down, there's been a transfer in the ownership of gold from west to east, from the old industrial world to the young, newly industrialized economies led by China and India. But the people who are buying in these countries outside the U.S. are long-term holders. Gold is moving into strong hands and is held by people who are unlikely to sell anytime soon. You know, they're accumulating for the long run. And for many of these people, the long run is measured in generations, not in months or years. So in addition, we have central banks, again, from China, but also Russia and a bunch of smaller economies. Besides, it wants to be buying more gold. There's going to be a shortage of available supply. And I would underline the word available. So response in price is likely to be far quicker and far greater in magnitude than most people would imagine possible for the next couple of years. And looking at the other side of the equation, while gold has been going to Asia and the East, if you will, it's being sold in the West, mostly by institutional speculators, bullion dealers and bullion bankers, commodity funds and hedge funds, who have no vested interest in gold per se. They just see it as one of a long list of possible markets for speculation or investment. And when their views of markets change, which I think is happening now, when their views of markets and value change, they're going to become pro-gold once again after many years of being sort of on the short side of the gold market, if you will. And they're going to start buying as well, a reversal from the last few years when institutional speculators have been sellers. And we've seen it even in the last few weeks in terms of the renewed inflow of bullion into gold ETFs, whereas in the last few years, ETFs have been a source of selling. Now they're becoming once again an avenue of demand. And that, too, is going to put pressure on the price as it continues and as the shortage of physical gold becomes more apparent.
You know, I debated for, it seemed like for years, with many of our top guests who just said they can't raise rates. It won't happen. You know, the Fed funds futures are demanding higher rates. We will see higher. No, they can't. Eventually, most of our guests have capitulated. And of course, that can be a downdraft for the precious metals.
Well, I think, first of all, there's a very widespread misconception about how gold behaves during periods of rising interest rates. The historical evidence suggests that contrary to that viewpoint, gold has risen and is likely to rise as interest rates go up. We saw that in the 1970s when gold went from $35 an ounce to briefly just over $800 an ounce in 1980. And we've seen it again during recent years of gold price appreciation. It's also been occurring with the Fed in a tightening mode and interest rates rising. So I don't buy the argument that if the Fed tries to tighten a little bit, that it's going to hurt the gold price. I think, in fact, quite the opposite. The reason the Fed might try and raise rates further is because the economy, in their view, seems to be strengthening. But when I look at the economy, I don't see it strengthening. I see it weakening and vulnerable to further setbacks. And that suggests to me that, in contrast to expectations of rising interest rates, which in any event wouldn't destroy a gold bull market, I think interest rates could very well come down back to zero or into negative territory, or we could see some newfangled policy instruments that might, with the hope of stimulating the economy from the Fed's point of view, maybe another round of quantitative easing or something we haven't yet seen, some new instrument or method of stimulating through monetary policy. I think we're more likely to see that than we are likely to see rising interest rates. When it becomes apparent that the Fed, in a sense, has used its last policy tools and is still facing a weakening economy, I think that is going to be very positive for gold. You know, in the 1930s, now this is a long time back to be making an illustration, but nevertheless, in the 1930s, gold prices were hiked by the central bank under President Franklin Roosevelt as a stimulative measure. We could see something like that again, where the Fed, in fact, pushes gold prices higher as part of an effort to stimulate the economy.
1970s, higher rates, much higher gold prices, despite naysayers, as well as Barsky and Summers, you know, seminal paper, which highlighted the importance of negative real interest rates underlying the precious metals.
Importantly, it's real interest rates that really matter. And honestly, who knows where real interest rates are, because the inflation statistics are so undependable or unreliable. I think inflation is probably significantly higher than the statistics would indicate. We're in a sense in treacherous waters, and the ship of state is going one way or the other in some unpredictable fashion. As I said, I think the consumer price index and other price indicators are not really true signals of what's happening to prices in the marketplace. You know, any housewife who goes to the grocery store knows that prices have been rising over the last few years, whereas the statistics suggest just the opposite. And here, as an aside, let me just say, I recently had some problems with my cable TV and internet service. And I recall a few years ago, if you called the cable company, they'd send over a technician to find out what was wrong and fix it. Now, you're lucky if you can get somebody on the phone, and you're spending your own time dealing with the problem, maybe over the phone with a technical support person. But it's equivalent to a price increase when you're spending your own time rather than the vendor spending his time dealing with problems of one sort or the other. Gold is going to go up anyway when sentiment in the markets change a bit, because a shortage of supply in the face of rising demand is going to push prices up. We have to remember that the gold market, the physical market, is increasingly under the sway of Asia, and not of the United States, and not of Western Europe, but China and its satellite countries in Southeast Asia. And their interest in buying gold is for reasons much different than we in the West buy or hold or do whatever we do with gold. They're buying it, as I said before, for the long term. They're buying it for because of cultural, religious reasons, and they feel comfortable holding gold much more so than they would feel about owning equities or real estate. Those markets have gone through the ringer already in China, and they're still overinflated. They're still in a bubble situation. And this is only going to feed demand from the average consumer, the average household, the average investor at the retail level in China and elsewhere in Asia. And when that demand continues and the supply from the West, from the U.S. and Western Europe diminish, we're going to have higher prices, whatever happens to interest rates in the United States, whatever happens to inflation in the Western world. Those may be icing on the cake if they're supportive of gold prices, but it's not necessary for us to see gold at new heights in the next few years.
With that type of subterfuge, with this type of covert operations all over the developed and developing world, you know, you don't have to have this Weimar-like currency disruption or global conflict. You have this contrarian play.
You don't have to be bearish on some of these economic factors, interest rates, inflation, growth. They may be pro-gold, and I think to some extent they will be, but they're not likely to prevent gold from going higher in any event. I think it's sort of whether it's nighttime or daytime, we're going to see the path to higher prices, whatever happens in the economy. The world is a very uncertain place, and as we've seen in recent years, subject to sort of what's called black swan events, you know, bolts from the blue, things that are unpredicted, haven't been predicted, maybe unpredictable, but they come out of the blue, and those are the things that could send gold higher.
And we're saying we're accepting the fact that we're not sure, but we can't fill in all the blanks yet. So we don't want to leave ourselves exposed. And again, it brings me back to safety net for your portfolio.
I think, importantly, gold is a win-win in the sense that whatever happens, gold prices today are undervalued and they will go higher in the next few years by more than most analysts would dare guess or predict. We're very bullish on gold simply because the supply is in strong hands and insufficient to meet likely demand in the next few years.
Your work seems to imply that that correction is nearing its end. Do you then anticipate the yellow metal to eclipse its 1900 peak from 2010?
Yes, yes, most definitely. I think that that could go, if not by the end of this year, certainly next year. And that will be not the end of the bull market in gold, but just a stopping point as we go to much higher prices in the next several years. I wouldn't be surprised to see gold 3 or 4 or 5 6 7 years from now at $3,000, $4,000, maybe even $5,000 an ounce. You know, when you get a market reflecting sentiment, it has the possibility of going far beyond where the fundamentals and the reasonable analysis would suggest. So at some point, I think we're going to see exactly that, an inflow into gold in a sense that is beyond justification, that's going to bring us to very, very high prices. The secret for investors will be you know, is it time to take profits on some of our holdings? And that's the sort of thing that investors have to be thinking about, but not for several years.
I mean, the Dow is now around 16,000, if I got it right. That's maybe far above where gold is likely to go. And I think gold investors would be happy and rejoicing if we just hit 4,000 or even 3,000. So I think those are more reasonable targets in a period of a blow-off. It could go much higher, but I don't think 16,000 is in the cards. Not in our lifetimes, anyway.
Very good. So you're not looking for a wholesale destruction, for a reset.
I think we're going to muddle through somehow. I mean, we always have, and there could be difficult times ahead, particularly if you're one of the people who have lost a lot of money in stocks or in real estate. Those are markets that have done well in the last few years. Some would say they're in a bubble. But when the bubble bursts, you know, it can go the other way very quickly.
Tell folks more, please, about the services you provide and any contact information you'd like to leave with the listening audience today.
Well, I would suggest that, first of all, listeners who are interested in expanding their gold positions or initiating gold positions be in touch with Roslyn Capital directly. I also, apart from my relationship with Roslyn, consult with a number of major players in the world of gold, funds, central banks, mints, mining companies, and the like. So those services are not something that would necessarily be of interest to your listeners and customers. But they can also follow my thinking on my website, which is nicholsongold.com, get an up-to-date reading on my thinking about the marketplace and where gold is going.
Jeffrey Nichols, we want to thank you for your time and look forward to having you back here on GoldSeek.com Radio.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure and a lot of fun talking to you.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. After perusing the myriad stories and developments this week for discussion, political, financial, technological, and others, I decided instead to look at how problems and challenges that confront each of us on an individual basis can actually be solved. In other words, what can we do? What action steps can we create to align, redirect, and shatter the obstacles each of us are facing right now? This is an area I have covered extensively in my corporate speaking engagements for over two decades. And considering all the negativity in the news, both mainstream and alternative, I wanted to provide at least a brief insight into a method of thinking that will show you a path for creating action steps and solutions out of any problem or challenge you are currently facing. so that no matter how challenging outside forces may be, many of which we have no direct control over, you can find a path to creating solution-based outcomes in your own immediate situation, which at the end of the day is what really matters. In 1992, I published an audio cassette program. Yes, that was before CDs and MP3s. A program called The Greatest Secret Never Told, which articulated the following. And that is, there isn't a problem or a challenge that you face in your life right now that at some level you do not already know the answer to. Let me say that again so it sinks in. There isn't a problem or a challenge that you face in your life right now that at some level you do not already know the answer to. Now, you may not like some of the answers you come up with. They may involve stepping outside your comfort zone and looking reality square in the eye, possibly for the first time. That may mean reevaluating your current definition of success. It may involve reevaluating a current project, business, or educational endeavor, or saying goodbye to one set of friends who may inadvertently be holding you back, and opening the door to a new set of friends and new opportunities. Or it may be as complex as reassessing a job, relationship, or lifestyle that you're thinking of upsizing or downsizing for health, emotional, or financial reasons. And with all the stressors about what might happen if that are discussed throughout the various media, it's often easy to get overwhelmed, which makes it even harder to put things in perspective about what can you be doing now to live a happy, productive life against a backdrop of rapid and volatile change. But guess what? We've always lived against a backdrop of rapid and volatile change. Today we have more tools for delivering more messages to more people at an overwhelming capacity. Amidst that ocean of information, one must struggle to lead their life. And today, more than ever, one must understand how to realistically process often negative information and fight to lead a happy life instead of succumbing to all negativity all the time. The battle for your mind is alive and well. But the most important battle, or should I say conversation, is the one you have with yourself. So getting back to the idea that there isn't a problem or a challenge that you face in your life right now, that at some level you do not already know the answer to, I want you to remember this, and that is, you know much more than you think you know about the challenges you are facing right now. I'll give you one example before we conclude. Think of a problem or challenge you are currently facing. Now ask yourself this question. What am I pretending not to know about this situation? It might be an investment, a healthcare situation, or a career move. Be honest with yourself. What am I pretending not to know about this situation? Write down 5 observations. Avoid censoring your thoughts. See how answers you thought you didn't have begin to bubble up to the surface. And once you have those answers, you can begin a more exhaustive conversation with yourself about the subject at hand. This is but one question in a larger set of tools for creating greater clarity of problems and obstacles, which can then be translated into action steps. The point to all of this is that you have the power, lots of power, to solve problems of all kinds and lead a happy, productive, and fulfilling life right now, despite what is going on out there in the larger world today or in the near future. You have the ability to align and redirect your personal situation and find happiness right now. Get on with your life, because it matters. Chris, I'd like to direct our listeners to visit my website at conquerchange.com and join my new email list. I've been gearing up for some time to release new content and special features, which are soon to be just around the corner, so please direct your browser to conquerchange.com and sign up today. Updates will follow soon, and until next time, this is Robert Ian with conquerchange.com. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week. Peter Grandich has published commentary on the mining and metals sector for decades now. He's currently president of Peter Grandich and Company. Welcome back, Peter Grandich.
Thank you for always having me.
We just had Ralph Acampora on the show and had some interesting comments on the precious metals as well as the commodities that I think runs contrary to a lot of bears. He's convinced that the yellow metal and silver, as well as crude oil, have most likely found their bottoms. Now, there could be retests ahead, but he thinks the lows, the nadirs, are in place.
Well, I operate under the basis that the only one that really truly knows the future is God, but we can take good stabs at it. I think pretty much online, I don't see how oil goes back or even tests the mid-20s lows. I think we've had an absolute bottom, and I think the same could be said for gold. I know that this time last year, every day you all read somewhere somebody writing the death of gold, and it was going well under 1,000 and never get back above 1,000. And it managed to put in an incredible bottom. And I don't know, in 3+ decades of being around financial markets, I don't remember any market where it was just universal bearishness and basically last one out, turn out the light. So I think clearly both gold and oil have not only bottom, I don't see any type of retest, anything close to those lows that were made in gold, in the 1050 area, and in oil in the, the mid-20s.
Exactly. I mean, it was a remarkable sell-off. I mean, take a look at the 147 Zenith we saw 5 or 6 years ago, almost 5 years of sideways actions, and then it all just culminated with this dollar strength and broke down to, as you say, sub-30s. That seemed a bit extreme. It's good to hear that two top, Wall Street pundits are on board, at least with us, that we could have seen the bottom. Do you like the shares, or are they overbought?
I think the shares were always a different story. They always tend to, when something has bottomed, they tend to move up far more percentage-wise. I think we've seen that both in the oil stocks, the metal stocks. If we look how much oil and gold percentage-wise is off its bottom, the shares are multiples higher than that. I think in the gold area, I think there's, while they've moved up a lot, I think if one has multiple year horizons and not just a day trader, there's still a lot of room in that. I mean, people have to understand, and I was a victim of it too, of how devastation there's been from 2012 to this year in the metals and mining industry across a vast spectrum, not just metals, but base metals and steel and iron ore and all those things. And it's like battleships. They just don't turn on a dime. And I think people have been so badly beaten and bruised that even if they see the ship turning, they really won't jump back in until it's clear and evident that it's clear sailing again. So I think shares can consolidate at any period of time, but I think particularly in the metals, and they can move separately, historically at least, than what the general stock market does. I think if there was a big swoon in the general stock market, even if oil itself wasn't selling off because the oil stocks are so widely held, they could go down with that swoon. But I think I just don't know anybody who was really buying gold shares in the last few years. So I just think anybody that had to sell has done it. And that's why I think that there's still long-term, you know, there would be a substantial room on the upside. If you believe, as I do, that gold, you know, has a $1,400 or even $1,500 price before the end of the year in it.
We agree with you. $1,400, $1,500, we have our sights set on that target, 21 to 26, best case for silver. And we also share your thoughts on, you know, the XAU down to lows not seen since maybe 2000, 2001. Give back all of the bull market, the 2001 to 2012 gold bull market, all of the gains that were recorded during that time, and maybe even went sub from the starting point briefly. That's virtually 100% retracement. I wonder if our listeners could imagine if the Dow Jones made a 100% retracement from the maybe 1929, 1931 low, the onset of the Great Depression. So excessive pessimism, certainly there. Just a normal retracement, a Fibonacci retracement, would take us higher. We haven't discussed the equities. We don't want to see a break of the, you know, obviously support in the next few weeks. Otherwise, we'll have another retest of the lows we put in now and a couple of swings in the S&P and the Dow.
Well, I think the story that's not being widely discussed that's going to have a serious impact in the equity market is really the death blow to the hedge fund industry. I think there's clear evidence that the hedge fund model is not only under assault, but it's been, I believe, terminally damaged. And if that's true, and how much hedge funds have had in the past influence on the equity markets, I think that is a net negative for the general equity market. I will argue, in hindsight, it's always 20/20 to look back that the most important thing that propelled the equity market the last few years higher is the Fed. The second most has been hedge funds and big money using a variety of programs, some of them only related to computer algorithms and couldn't even know what the name of the company is or what it does. But those things have helped propel the market higher. And I think they're in danger or have seen their best days. And so I would suspect that if you remove that power from the equation, I don't see how giving valuations are historically high.
You know, Ralph Acampora brought up here as well. He said, look, you know, we've got political issues, concerns about the economy. Obviously, the Fed is nervous because they're not willing to raise rates. If they're not raising rates, there's concerns there by our policymakers. And of course, that could indicate less than sanguine conditions ahead for the domestic economy. A lot of wild cards and investors, not big aficionados of wild cards. Tell us what else is on the docket. Anything else, any other topicality for our listeners, please?
What surprises me to this day in the last couple of years is how little attention has been paid to how the U.S. market in general, not specific to a core, is trading and acting as the Japanese market has done since 1989. The governments are making similar moves with monetary policies, the substandard economic growth. Once a powerhouse. When people ask me, what do you think the U.S. stock market or the U.S. markets in general are going to do, I tell them, look no further than what Japan has done. And now, as you hinted that, I think eventually the Fed resorts not only to not raising interest rates, but be forced to some sort of QE4 or or worse, negative interest rates. I just think it's we've taken many of the actions that Japan has done, and we've seen how poorly it's worked for Japan. So I just think the United States is the sequel to Japan, in my honest estimate.
Stuck in the quagmire, not a lot of forward progress. We're likely to see some big volatility ahead and nervous investors. Certainly, you're paralleling a lot of the wiser minds on Wall Street and Main Street today. You're joining the chorus that maybe all is not as well as we think with the markets. And perhaps you'd like to share any contact information or more about petergrandich.com.
Your listeners are welcome to go to Peter Granich. That's Peter, G-R-A-N-D-I-C-H, one word, petergrandich.com. There's a Peter Speaks, that's our blog. They can just provide an email address and they can receive our comments.
Peter Granich, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank. And founding director, their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Gold closed at a four-week high. Peter Grandich has published commentary on the mining and metals sector for decades now. He's currently president of Peter Grandich and Company. Welcome back, Peter Grandich.
Thank you for always having me.
We just had Ralph Ekampora on the show and had some interesting comments on the precious metals as well as the commodities that I think runs contrary to a lot of bears. He's convinced that the yellow metal and silver, as well as crude oil, have most likely found their bottoms. Now, there could be retests ahead, but he thinks the lows, the nadirs, are in place.
Well, I operate under the basis that the only one that really, truly knows the future is God, but we can take good stabs at it. I think pretty much online, I don't see how oil goes back or even test the mid-20s lows. I think we've had an absolute bottom, and I think the same could be said for gold. I know that this time last year, every day you all read somewhere somebody writing the death of gold, and it was going well under 1,000 and never get back above 1,000, and it managed to put in an incredible bottom. And I don't know, in 3+ decades of being around financial markets, I don't remember any market where it was just universal bearishness and basically last one out, turn out the light. So I think clearly both gold and oil have not only bottomed, I don't see any type of retest, anything close to those lows that were made in gold, in the 1050 area, and in oil in the mid-20s.
Exactly. I mean, it was a remarkable sell-off. I mean, take a look at the 147 Zenith we saw 5 or 6 years ago, almost 5 years of sideways actions, and then it all just culminated with this dollar strength and broke down to, as you say, sub-30s. That seemed a bit extreme. It's good to hear that two top, Wall Street pundits are on board, at least with us, that we could have seen the bottom. Do you like the shares, or are they overbought?
I think the shares are always a different story. They always tend to, when something has bottomed, they tend to move up far more percentage-wise. I think we've seen that both in the oil stocks, the metal stocks. If we look how much oil and gold percentage-wise is off its bottom, the shares are multiples higher than that. I think in the gold area, I think there's, while they've moved up a lot, I think if one has multiple year horizons and not just a day trader, there's still a lot of room in that. I mean, people have to understand, and I was a victim of it too, of how devastation there's been from 2012 to this year in the metals and mining industry across a vast spectrum, not just metals, but base metals and steel and iron ore and all those things. And it's like battleships. They just don't turn on a dime. And I think people have been so badly beaten and bruised that even if they see the ship turning, they really won't jump back in until it's clear and evident that it's clear sailing again. So I think shares can consolidate at any period of time, but I think particularly in the metals. And they can move separately, historically at least, than what the general stock market does. I think if there was a big swoon in the general stock market, even if oil itself wasn't selling off because the oil stocks are so widely held, they could go down with that swoon. But I think I just don't know anybody who was really buying gold shares in the last few years. So I just think anybody that had to sell has done it. And that's why I think that there's still long-term, there would be a substantial room on the upside. If you believe, as I do, that gold, has a $1,400 or even $1,500 price before the end of the year in it.
We agree with you. $1,400, $1,500, we have our sights set on that target, 21 to 26, best case for silver. And we also share your thoughts on, the XAU down to lows not seen since maybe 2000, 2001. Give back all of the bull market, the 2001 to 2012 gold bull market, all of the gains that were recorded during that time, and maybe even went sub from the starting point briefly. That's virtually 100% retracement. I wonder if our listeners could imagine if the Dow Jones made a 100% retracement from the maybe 1929, 1931 low, the onset of the Great Depression. So excessive pessimism, certainly there. Just a normal retracement, a Fibonacci retracement, would take us higher. We haven't discussed the equities. We don't want to see a break of obviously support in the next few weeks. Otherwise, we'll have another retest of the lows we put in now and a couple of swings in the S&P and the Dow.
Well, I think the story that's not being widely discussed that's going to have a serious impact in the equity market is really the, I think, the death blow to the hedge fund industry. I think there's clear evidence that the hedge fund model is not only under assault, but it's been, I believe, terminally damaged. And if that's true, and how much hedge funds have had in the past influence on the equity markets, I think that is a net negative for the general equity market. I will argue, in hindsight, it's always 20/20 to look back, that the most important thing that propelled the equity market the last few years higher is the Fed. The second most has been hedge funds and big money using a variety of programs, some of them only related to computer algorithms and couldn't even know what the name of the company is or what it does. But those things have helped propel the market higher. And I think they're in danger or have seen their best days. And so I would suspect that if you remove that power from the equation, I don't see how giving valuations are historically high.
You know, Ralph Acampora brought up here as well. He said, look, you know, we've got political issues, concerns about the economy. Obviously, the Fed is nervous because they're not willing to raise rates. If they're not raising rates, there's concerns there by our policymakers. And of course, that could indicate less than sanguine conditions ahead for the domestic economy. A lot of wild cards and investors, not big aficionados of wild cards. Tell us what else is on the docket. Anything else, any other topicality for our listeners, please?
What surprises me to this day in the last couple of years is how little attention has been paid to how the U.S. market in general, not specific to a core, is trading and acting as the Japanese market has done since 1989. The governments are making similar moves with monetary policies. The substandard economic growth, once a powerhouse. When people ask me, what do you think the U.S. stock market or the U.S. markets in general are going to do, I tell them, look no further than what Japan has done. And now, as you hinted that, I think eventually the Fed resorts not only to not raising interest rates, but be forced to some sort of QE4 or worse, negative interest rates. I just think we've taken many of the actions that Japan has done, and we've seen how poorly it's worked for Japan. So I just think the United States is the sequel to Japan, in my honest estimate.
Stuck in the quagmire, not a lot of forward progress. We're likely to see some big volatility ahead and nervous investors. Certainly, you're paralleling a lot of the wiser minds on Wall Street and Main Street today. You're joining the chorus that maybe all is not as well as we think with the markets. And perhaps you'd like to share any contact information or more about petergranditch.com.
Your listeners are welcome to go to Peter Granditch. That's Peter, G-R-A-N-D-I-C-H, one word, petergranditch.com. There's a Peter Speaks, that's our blog. They can just provide an email address and they can receive our comments.
Peter Granditch, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank. And founding director, their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project. offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
Gold Seek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garnero, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank. And founding director, their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
Gold Seek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.